Yeah.
Quiet, Darth. I thought we were going to see Grace.
Set up the camera and everything is quiet.
Did you bring us a breast
cancer? Yes. Thank you.
Back.
They're so nice. This is really nice.
We have such crappy pens here.
Yeah.
Is ready? I call to order the Tuesday, March 8th, 2016 meeting of the Derry Township Board of Supervisors. I'd like to ask that everyone rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May we have the roll call, please?
Member Matt Weir.
Here.
Member Justin Engel.
Here.
Member Susan Court.
Here.
Member Mark Moyer.
Here.
Member John Foley.
Here. Although it is posted within the meeting room, I want to advise those persons attending this meeting that it is and has been the policy of the township to tape record all public meetings for the purpose of providing accurate minutes. I also want to announce that the Board of Supervisors met in the executive session to discuss land and legal issues. At this time, I would like to invite visitor and public comments and ask that anyone wishing to make comments to the Board of Supervisors present themselves at the podium, identify themselves, their place of residence, and limit their comments to 3 minutes or less. Seeing none, I'd like to have a motion to approve the Board of Supervisors, February 23rd, 2016, minutes.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? And that is unanimously, those minutes are unanimously approved. Beginning with new business, it is a distinct honor and privilege to administer the oath of office to our newest police chief, Garth Warner, and would like to ask that the chief come forward to receive the oath of office. And if you have anyone that wants to accompany you for that, that would be fine as well, your wife or anyone else.
The laws and constitution of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
The laws and constitution of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
And all municipal ordinances of the Township of Derry.
And all municipal ordinances of the Township of Derry.
I will obey all lawful orders and directives of the Derry Township Board of Supervisors.
I will obey all lawful orders and directives of the Derry Township Board of Supervisors.
I will selflessly serve the citizens of Derry Township competently.
I will selflessly serve the citizens of Derry Township competently.
With integrity.
With integrity.
And will at all times represent the community professionally.
And will at all times represent the community professionally.
I take this obligation freely.
I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
And that I will faithfully discharge the duties of the rank of Chief of Police.
And that I will faithfully discharge the duties of the rank.
To the best of my abilities.
To the best of my abilities.
With honor and fidelity.
With honor and fidelity.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Chief.
No comments, Chief? No? Okay. All right. Item number A1-1 is the presentation by Michael Vind of FS&L Financial Solutions on financial options for funding capital projects. Mr. Vind, would you care to provide us with the information you think it's important for us to know?
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And it's going to be pretty difficult following that, but with especially
we'll take it personally that you empty the room. Mike.
Well, exactly. No one wants to hear about municipal finance. So, again, thank you, commissioners, supervisors, for the opportunity to come here and present financial solutions to you today. Also, go over a little bit about our firm, how we provide municipalities financial advisory services, and then answer any questions that the supervisors may have moving forward. I'll try not to go through the entire book, but I did provide a book that I would like to go through at this point. And if you just flip basically through the first to page 6, I just wanted to give a high-level overview of the municipal marketplace. And what this chart goes through is just to show you the 5, 10-year, and 30-year Treasury rates since 2005 through the present. And as you can see, we're still at a very low historical rate average. And what this does is provides municipalities as well as economic development opportunities throughout your jurisdiction. Money is very cheap, so municipalities can borrow at a very cheap rate. And conversely, economic development is spurred by because they can borrow at a very cheap rate and are willing to make that investment in times like this. The next page is page 7, and what this shows is the U.S. Treasury curve versus what's called MMD. And again, I'm not going to go through everything in grave detail unless you have questions, but MMD is the AAA-rated municipal bond curve. Derry Township, if it ever goes out for tax-exempt bonds, is going to trade at a spread to that AAA curve. And as you can see, that AAA curve actually is cheaper in some places than the actual U.S. Treasury curve, which, again, spurs a lot of this development, refinancing opportunities, et cetera, for municipalities in the current marketplace. On page 8 and page 9, what I did is I go through recent legislation that was basically brought on by the Dodd-Frank Act. And what it does, and that became effective in July 1st, 2014, is that when you go out and borrow money, you have a bank or an underwriter go out and sell those bonds to the open market. What the Dodd-Frank and the this legislation does is basically say that they are on the opposite side of the table in a transaction, and the financial advisor is the only one that has a fiduciary duty to the municipality in those types of transactions. Not to say that anybody is doing anything nefarious, but when you sit down and look at basically one side of the table versus the other, we would be, as a financial advisor, the fiduciary and the only one that has a fiduciary duty to the township in those types of transactions. So it draws a very clear line in the sand. Section 2 is just an overview of financial solutions, and that starts on page 11. We are an SEC and MSRB registered municipal advisor. We are headquartered in Reading, Pennsylvania. However, we do have several satellite offices that are also MSRB and SEC registered, and that includes Scranton, Ligonier, Pennsylvania, which is out in Westmoreland County, Lancaster, and then Princeton, New Jersey as well. We do have a very diverse client base. We have extensive experience with municipalities, including townships and boroughs. So we are very familiar with all the plights that you are going through, all the challenges, and we our job is to assist you through those in funding those types of capital projects. And then if you would ever go out and borrow or refinance, make sure that any deal is priced on market and you're getting the best deal possible. If you want to flip to page 15, some of the services that we do provide, again, is coming to every meeting, also attending administrative meetings, making formal presentations, meeting with the supervisors, one-on-one, answering questions, making sure an ongoing education process is one of the key aspects so that the supervisors and everyone on the township that is in the decision-making process is aware of all the benefits and potential risks of any type of transaction. And again, that draws back to our fiduciary duty to the township only. Page 16, and again, these are just some of the other services that we do have the capability. I want to let you know that we're one of the very few financial advisory firms in Pennsylvania that has the independent pricing technology that we see the exact same pricing that all the big desks see on a real-time basis, so we can actually give you, the township, and the supervisors comfort that your transaction is priced on market at any given time, including derivatives, which are a little bit more complex. On page 17, what I did was I just listed a very brief summary of four other Pennsylvania townships where we currently provide these services to as well. We'd be happy to provide the township, if it would so choose, an extensive list of our client base and references at its request. The final section before the disclosure statement, which is, again, you don't need to read that unless you want to put yourself to sleep. But page 19 goes through a scope of what would be our financial advisory services. And again, we're committed to providing the township with the best possible independent advice. We're not affiliated with any broker dealer. We're not here to sell you a product. Our job is to make sure that you understand all the benefits and risks in a particular transaction, all of your options, and that if you decide to move forward with a particular transaction, it is executed at the best possible market rate. And then we just list, again, some of the items that we would go through in a particular transaction. And if you would like me to read each one, I'd be happy to do so. But again, it would be from the start to the evaluation stage to rating agencies to capital planning to going through the documents, reviewing them from a financial perspective, managing the financing process, making sure everything's priced correctly, and then make sure that anything that you decide to move forward with is executed on a timely basis and you don't have what's, you know, a stale deal where things start to break down. And then the final section on there is, again, just a disclosure statement. But in summary, what we're here to do, because this is a new legislation, is to make you aware that we are here on a fiduciary duty only to the township. We only provide this service. We don't flip-flop from one service to the other, depending on what our role is. We are committed to just a full-time financial advisory shop. And we, again, thank you for the opportunity to come and present these services to you tonight. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that the supervisors or anybody else may have at this point.
Any questions? I'll start with a comment and then try to get to
Thank you. Times are tough around here. So just a general comment. So this conversation has started by sort of identifying that we have a need to fund a community improvements to the rec center in 4 years. So so just for the public, that's kind of what has led to us inviting Michael and potentially other firms to start talking about some capital planning. Just a general comment that we've had the conversation that Lou Verdelli from Royal Bank of Canada, RBC, handles our bonds and has done a fabulous job for many years. And this is we're not looking to replace Lou. So just to make that clear to everyone. So can you give us a sense, Michael, what, and feel free to weigh in here, other supervisors, but you talked a lot about bonds, about helping with reviewing transactions but capital budgeting, capital funding, how can you help us look 4 years into the future and potentially help us create the revenue or identify the revenue that's going to help fund this project?
Well, Supervisor Engel, what we would do on a particular project, and let's just use that community center as an example, Again, because money is so cheap, there are some opportunities to take advantage of that where developers may come in or a public-private partnership. There are a lot of options there where you don't necessarily have to use taxpayer dollars to fund some of these capital projects. We also have in our platform the ability to tap into some of the state resources to possibly get some grant monies and help, obviously, the township, I'm sure, has that capability as well, but help supplement some of those efforts as well from a capital planning perspective. Also, then we also do on a lot of our consulting engagements, assist townships with budgeting, again, 3-5 year budgeting to help see in the future how to best effectively finance any type of particular project with obviously an emphasis on reducing potential taxpayer impact. Again, we want to give you all the options that are available to you, and we dive into great detail, and it'd probably be not a lot of the public meeting, but also dealing with a lot of your staff and the planning and Lauren and things of that nature, where we'd go over all these options, what the potential benefits and risks, and then present to the supervisors. But that would absolutely be more of a consulting type engagement versus a strict municipal advisory engagement, but we do perform those on a very regular basis. We also have had a lot of experience with distress. Obviously, Derry is not in any way distressed, but when we go into those distressed communities, what we're doing is long-term planning for a fiscal turnaround. It's very similar in the fact that you do capital budgeting for those type of engagements as well to allow them to get their footing, but we would do that for a capital project and go through all the potential options and again the benefits and risks to all those options, you know, as you work through your project.
So with a township like Derry, do you work on a project by project, or do you look at the whole makeup of the township?
Let's just give an example. If we were brought in for just a particular project, let's again use that community center, we would probably focus predominantly on that community center. However, we would be very, very cognizant of all the other aspects and moving parts of the township. If we were brought in basically as a full financial advisor, and again, that would be side projects, you know, similar to the community center, but also with the bonds, it would be on a transaction by transaction basis. So to be clear, if we would envision some sort of on a consulting engagement, we usually go on some sort of hourly basis, and I'm not trying to get into the economics, but it, more of an hourly basis. When we normally do pure financial advisory, we normally charge on a transaction by transaction basis, but we're usually in contact with our clients on a very regular basis because we are continuously monitoring them for opportunities to take advantage of the market.
Michael, not to put you on the spot, but could you kind of give us a little bit of a case study, maybe in a similar community, kind of how your firm helped them accomplish their goals so that we can kind of understand how that might relate to what we're trying to achieve?
Sure. What we did, one particular community, and again, it was a different tax type structure, but I wanted to give you an example of how the entire platform helped, if that helps. The Scranton-Lackawanna Stadium Authority just built PNC Park, which is now they're called the Rail Riders, but it's the New York Yankees AA affiliate. It used to be, and I forget the name, I apologize, but they had a very dilapidated stadium. It had been built 20 years ago. It's supported by hotel taxes. There was a threat of potentially losing the team, which would have been a very big hit to their local economy. And what we did as a platform is, one, we financial solutions helped with the financing and the structuring of that, especially with very, very limited resources up in northeastern Pennsylvania, because it's not the demographics are a lot different than the Hershey area. So that was a very big time constraint, or excuse me, a very, very big constraint. There was also potential legal aspects between Luzerne and Lackawanna counties because they had originally built the stadium in conjointly. So there was some argument or claim by both counties to the revenues of that system. There's also a state grant application process. What we did is help with the whole package from start to finish. Now, there was a lot of other firms involved. We worked collaboratively as a team, a financing team, and also a team for that development to occur. And it came to fruition, I believe, about a year and a half ago. But again, it had the components of state and federal grants, legal aspects, cross-jurisdiction municipality cooperation, financing component. They didn't want to use taxpayer dollars as well, so we had to find a supplement to just the hotel tax revenues because, again, it's the hotel tax revenues up there are very limited in comparison to some other jurisdictions. So I hope that gives you a good example of kind of our entire platform helping out with a particular project. Yeah.
So that is, and I did notice that on your bio that you've had a lot of experience with stadium deals in the past, which is, yes. As we filled you in, it is interesting as we take this project on, we're really looking at the community center, but there's this other opportunity, right?
No, I very much appreciate it.
And, for allowing us to approach you about yeah. any other questions.
Yeah, please feel free to contact me anytime. I think Justin has my contact information, yeah. but please feel free to reach out. Thank
Great.
You.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you. Appreciate it.
On to agenda item B1 through 3, consideration of resolution number 1462, which would establish reimbursable fees for the township solicitor related to review expenses under the provision of the subdivision and land development ordinance. Mr. Tremmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That pretty much summarizes what we're after. This could almost be called ordinary business. In order to be able to charge an applicant for professional services, the Board of Supervisors needs to adopt by resolution a fee schedule. And that's what's before you this evening for our solicitor, John Yost, in order to be able to charge that out on a regular basis to applicants. When his services go beyond advising the township and into developing agreements and things of the sort as part of a development.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor of adopting resolution 1462, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, and the resolution passes unanimously. Item C1 through 8, the adoption of resolution number 1463, approving an application to the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation for modifications to the traffic signal at the intersection of Hershey Park Drive and Walton Avenue, May Street. Mr. Negley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The modifications to this signal are necessary to accommodate the pedestrian crossing signals and ramps and modify pavement markings for dual eastbound left turn lanes, protect the left turn phase on the side streets.
Any questions or discussion among the board? Do I have a motion to approve resolution 1463?
So moved.
I'll second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And resolution 1463 is hereby approved unanimously. Moving on to D1 through 8, the adoption of resolution 1464. Approving an application to the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation for modifications to the traffic signal at the intersection of Walton Avenue and East Main Street. Again, Mr. Negley.
Modifications will accommodate the additional loop sensor and pavement markings and changes to convert the eastbound right lane turn into a shared through right lane.
Any comments or questions?
So moved.
Second.
Seconded by Ms. Court. And all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And adoption of resolution 1464 is approved unanimously. Turning to E1 through 8, the adoption of resolution 1465, approving an application to the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation for a new flashing beacon at the intersection of Middletown Road and Gramercy Place. Mr. Negley.
Thank you. The pedestrian improvements along Middletown Road include a crossing on Middletown Road with an actuated rectangular rapid flashing beacon.
Thank It's pretty impressive sounding there, Mr. Nagley. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
I'll second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Absent any comments, if anybody, I apologize for being premature on the motion, but okay. That approved, resolution is approved unanimously. Turning to board and committee information and correspondence, Ms. Court?
I have none this evening.
Mr. Ware?
I just want to mention the absence of a tree vitalized program this spring. There's several organizations in the community doing a butterfly project on Cocoa Avenue. And they're going to kick that off this Sunday with a presentation in the library from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And it's going to be in conjunction with the new conservatory up at the Rose Garden. So if any of you have time on Sunday, I think you'd be very interested to hear what's going to be said about the monarch butterflies.
Thank you, Matt.
What's the date, Matt?
Sunday,
15th. This coming Sunday.
Yes.
I have nothing. Mr. Foley?
I have nothing.
Mr. Engel?
I have something. A couple items. And I find it, just want to note that I find it interesting that Mr. Foley always gives me a hard time for talking too much. He happens to be sitting next to me. My microphone's plugged in there. It doesn't work.
I had nothing to do with it. This is my microphone.
Purely accidental.
Right.
Coincidence, perhaps?
So there's the Recycle Bank. Just a real quick mention about the Recycle Bank. The high school is right on the finish line of trying to get points for Recycle Bank. If they get so many points, then Recycle Bank matches the dollars. The deadline is March 15th, so if there's anybody out there that has, or Charles, if you choose to write anything about it, if anybody has Recycle Bank points, it would tip the high school over the edge and get more points.
I think they're at 80-some-odd percent as of today.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's real easy. If you don't know what to do with your points, this is a perfect way to invest them in our students. So.
Right. Just want to report that there was a rec center stakeholder meeting last night. Susan and I participated in, and the that stakeholder group continues to make progress talking about the new rec center and programming for that. Chuck is going to talk about zoning update, so I'll wait there. And then I wanted to bring up a crosswalk issue or opportunity at Homestead Road and Meadow Lane. So, and Garth, I don't mean to blindside you on this. This is one that we talked about months ago that I've had another comment about. And I just wanted to bring it up with the board and see if, so this intersection, you can see on, I guess it would be the north side, you can see where there used to be a crosswalk. This is an extremely busy intersection in the morning with school drop-off. And I think years ago what happened was there were students that were being dropped off on the Old Meadow Lane side because the line was too long. And so parents were dropping their children off at Old Meadow Lane, and then the students would then walk across the crosswalk, causing even more congestion. So I think, if I understand correctly, that's why the crosswalk was removed there. To put a crosswalk back in would almost necessitate a crossing guard in the morning. If I understand correctly, there's currently 5 crossing guards.
Yes.
That and the school district and the township share that cost equally, is that correct?
Yes.
So, and there is pedestrian, you can see that there's pedestrian facilities on either side. So the question becomes, is there an appetite for bringing up the idea of funding a crossing guard here in the mornings during school, which would then create the opportunity to reinstall potentially, if code and requirements are met, reinstall a crosswalk. I want to just add before I let others speak that just this last week I was on Old Meadow Lane, came to the light, and came to the intersection from Old Meadow Lane, and I was behind a DTMA truck, interestingly, that sat for a long time because literally the traffic is so car to car that a truck wasn't able to pull out. And then a student was standing on the what looks to be a concrete on the other side of the road. Can you move the pointer over on the other side of Homestead? Right there. Basically approached that, stepped back from the intersection, and had to wait for the traffic to slow down. So when pedestrians do get there, it's virtually impossible to cross Homestead Road during a certain 10 to 15 minute period. So I just wanted to bring up the issue, see if anybody had any thoughts.
Justin, is that something we ought to talk to the school district about as well?
So when we met a couple months ago, we did include the school district.
Okay.
And what are their thoughts?
We didn't necessarily propose that it be done, but her name is escaping me right now, the safety and security.
Lisa Miller.
Yes.
She seemed to be receptive. We ended the meeting with her basically saying, you know, let us know what you're interested in doing.
I mean, that could, as you know, I live down the street, so I watch this all in the mornings. And I think those kids coming from that side then have to go all the way up to Java to cross at the crosswalk, which is really out of the way, especially if you're going to the middle school or the high school and you're coming from that side of town. And I wonder how many people are just attempting to cross minus the crosswalk, just like we have other places in our community where there's no crosswalk, but you still have to get across the street. So I think it's worth looking into. And even beyond school hours, that's a great connector to the bike path. And without, because that's where I
that's
ride,
right.
And it's just not safe to cross there without that.
Yeah, yeah. And that's,
so
I
would say we should look at it.
That becomes part of the argument. It's 15 minutes before and after school where every hour outside of that, we don't have a crosswalk, mm-hmm. and there's clearly a lot of people that are using it.
Right.
Or crossing there.
Well, is that something we should put on then the school district liaison meeting agenda to discuss cost sharing?
I would, frankly, I would be in favor of moving a little faster than that.
Okay.
I mean, in other words, is that...
Why don't we initiate the study to find out its feasibility? And we're going to have to do that either way.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start the process.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it was there before, so let's really find out why it's not there now,
right.
and what the current need is from the school district's perspective, and then we can look at what the need is from the township's perspective and then figure out how to move forward.
Garth, did we firm that they removed it because of that situation?
As part of the new transportation plan on school district property.
Yeah.
Because of the way they were reconfiguring that transportation plan, the movement of vehicles on school property, that it would not only congest that intersection a little bit more because now you have everything coming out that exit across from Meadow Lane, but then also the ramifications from the traffic in the morning, especially during drop-off,
mm-hmm.
That they were getting those parents that would drop off on the east side of Homestead and allow their students to cross over unaided across. It's a wide intersection. It is a very wide intersection. So there's a lot of footage to traverse when you're going across that intersection. So
yeah.
It leaves you a little bit more vulnerable to traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's there were a couple factors in there that led to removing that crosswalk.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what I don't want to have happen is us start a process when the school district had a very specific reason for, like the chief mentioned, for removing that in the first place. So
mm-hmm.
I think our first order of business ought to be a dialogue with the school district to see whether or not that would sort of throw a monkey wrench into the works of whatever reason
yeah.
they had for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree. I mean, it is a very vital crossing point, but I don't want to
mm-hmm.
circumvent some deliberate thought processes by the school district.
And there's only, I think, only one crossing point on Homestead from Governor to 422.
Yeah.
There's more. There's Java,
there's
and
two.
Then there's
the one.
What
the block? Yeah, the
there's a mid block there at the elementary
Reba
school.
Yeah.
And actually, the one at Java is not there anymore. It's actually in front of the elementary school.
And there's a crossing guard there, right?
Yeah. At both of those locations, there's crossing guards.
Yeah. So there's one at, what'd you, at Java and?
Java was removed. It actually moved up a little bit in front of the elementary school.
So it's just the one then?
No, there's two.
There's two.
One at Ariba.
Oh, forgive me, Ariba. Yeah, right by the tennis courts.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah. There's one there. And then we keep saying Java, but it's Bahia. It used to be one at Bahia, but they moved that up to the elementary school.
So in the mornings, this is the one intersection. Every other intersection is very controlled, very orderly. This is the one intersection that is not. It's fairly chaotic. Do you experience the same thing?
Oh, very much so. I don't go out that way any longer.
Yeah.
I think you see a little bit more congestion in there right now, too, because of the closures on Meadow Lane and Homestead Lane with the roundabouts.
Yeah.
So anything that wants to try to traverse 322, they can't go down to those intersections right now because of the construction. They have to go out to Homestead.
Yeah.
And Tom could talk to this more, but with the construction that's going to happen on Java, assume that could throw a little bit more complications in the traffic in the morning. No. The stormwater work.
Any thoughts on how we ought to move forward to address our concerns in that regard?
I think we ought to look at the study. I mean, it's either way, we're going to need to study the intersection. And while we're doing that, do that in conjunction with reaching out to the school district. Yeah. They're going to ask the same questions. You know, do we have a study that says it's safe and it's practical and we can do this and it all makes sense?
Yeah, the study, an HRG study or a department study?
We can do it combined.
Both.
Yeah.
A department.
Let me start with the department.
Yeah, I mean, okay. You're going to do a traffic study.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I presume some of that has data that's in conjunction with HRG.
Correct.
Okay. Is there an appetite from the board to pursue?
Oh, I think we should, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, okay.
And then which...
But would the study be skewed by those traffic circles that they're building?
The current construction and then skewed by the...
Well, that's only a couple months long.
Well,
so.
But if we do the study now...
Yeah.
But it's not so much the volume, because you can make the argument that less traffic is coming from Meadow Lane because Meadow Lane is closed, right? But I don't think it's so much the volume as it is Garth identifying the width of the road and looking at those guidelines. Am I accurate there?
Yeah, you're going to have to look at geometric design
as
one of them. I guess the traffic counts could be skewed a little bit with the closure for the roundabouts. The thing about that is if you have people coming off of Chocolate Avenue wanting to get over to the Milton Hershey campus, now they have to go Homestead Road. There's no way they can cut through on Para and get through that way over to Meadow Lane and so forth. They have to come through either that intersection there or get onto Homestead Road a little bit north of that. So it might skew things a little bit as far as where vehicles are approaching from and how they're getting over to 322 and traversing that to get to the south side of the Milton Hershey School campus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, skew it enough that we should wait to look at it or just take it into consideration?
We can still look at it. I think your geometric design and your school times, the amount of students that you're going to get there, and even your pedestrian traffic is not going to change. You just might have conflicts from different locations, different directions.
And there's always going to be something. I mean, the roundabouts will close and school will be out, and, you know, so
yeah.
I think if we just take those things into consideration and talk
worth,
to the school district.
I think it's worth starting things now.
And I think I don't mean to irritate anybody or point fingers at anybody, but if you look at a broader view of this, I think it's a little bizarre that we remove a crosswalk next to a school. And that happened years ago. And I think that we've moved more towards walkability, towards I think we're moving more towards the direction of creating walkability rather than removing crosswalks, especially this close to a school. So it's just a general observation.
Well, I definitely think it's worthwhile getting that ball rolling. So,
yeah.
Chief, if you could perhaps take the initiative on starting
and
that.
Which one of us is going to reach out to the school district?
I've already been in touch with one school board member and Lisa. So, John or I, if that's...
We'll do it as the...
Okay.
Not a problem.
Okay. All right. Great. And thank you. I was remiss on the Taste of Hershey is going to occur at the Hershey Logic Convention Center, hosted by the Trojan Foundation this Sunday. So it's a very worthwhile event for a very worthwhile cause, and I encourage anyone who's available to attend. I think we're having a record number of restaurants participating this year. So it's really a great opportunity to sample a lot of local restaurants as well. So I apologize for omitting that.
And I have one more comment.
Okay.
Matt, are you planning to give us a brief update on the crossing for Oakmont?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay. Mr. Nagle, any comments or?
Nothing to report, thank you, sir.
Okay. Chief, do you have anything to report?
Nothing. I appreciate you indulging in all the noise that was going on out there and so forth, and I also appreciate you having the confidence to promote me to chief as the sixth chief of Derry Township. Thank you.
Well, we're looking forward to a great, great relationship.
Well,
so,
sir.
Yes.
As well.
Hershey Volunteer Fire Department.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you know, we recently moved in, and we're responding from our new station, and we absolutely love it.
Great.
When was the first fire call from that station?
Actually, it was the 27th. We started responding, and it was that evening. And there was a lot of guys that were disappointed because the 28th was going to be our actual formal date to move in, but we got done earlier. And we were the first one to respond. And unfortunately, some of them were a little perturbed that they weren't able to make it that night.
Right. Were there a lot on the first call?
Pardon?
Were there a lot on the first call?
No, because it was later in the evening.
It was late at night.
Yeah.
Looks beautiful, doesn't it?
Yeah, we're very proud of it. We're very pleased.
I would add, if I could just jump in for a moment, that there will be a community open house on April 23rd, and more information will be coming out about that, so the public gets a chance to come on in and get tours and see it firsthand.
Thank you. Tom?
We put the plows away and locked up the salt for the season.
Woo-hoo! That's great news. Barbara?
Thank you. I'd just like to recognize the Hershey Area Art Association this past Sunday. They had a celebration, their 20th anniversary of displaying their materials, all of their artwork, at the library. And they have a special display now in the gallery in the library, the long hallway to meeting room 2. And they are the ones who funded the new lighting that's in that hallway. So stop by. There's some really beautiful artwork that's well illuminated. Thank you.
Yeah, I've always been impressed with the artistic talent that's displayed there, considering I have very little of myself. So it's even more appreciated. Terry, anything to add?
No report this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. And Matt?
Just quickly, as the board is aware, we rolled out our fundraising efforts for the Cocoa Castle project recently. We've already received over $3,000 since last week towards that effort. Tomorrow morning with HRG, we have our kickoff meeting with DCNR to get the ball rolling on the project. So I'll be keeping the board and the community up to date in the coming weeks here.
Thank you. Chris?
Nothing. Huh. I'm waiting for something for Matt to help this presentation go a little smoother.
Ah, okay. Matt, anything?
You want me to jump in first?
Sure.
If that's okay, I'll go and then.
Okay.
We'll
sure.
Be up and running.
Can I just interrupt, Matt? Did I put you on the spot? Are you looking for this?
He's got it.
I was going to get Chris the exhibit so you guys can see it up there.
Okay. All right. Okay.
You good?
Okay.
Technology.
Yeah, beautiful thing.
Okay. All right, back to you, Matt.
So, before I forget, the pre-construction meeting for the Locust and Java project is scheduled for March 22nd with the contractor. So, that project continues to move along, albeit slowly. And last week, we looked at the potential pedestrian crossing at the Oakmont development. And what we have up here for you is three different alternatives that were discussed at the meeting. If you remember, I promised to kind of focus just on those three at this point and just do a very general study for you, bring you some information, and get some feedback before we dive into it too much. So three alternatives. Alternative number one is the red dashed line there, and that's coming off the cul-de-sac off of Windsor Court there that we discussed. Some of the issues we found with that red line, we mentioned that the gas facility last time, the blow-off valve was there. There's a good bit of trees, vegetation, and also a detention basin along Wood Road and Walterville intersection there. As you go further up towards the barn, there are utility poles. Not sure if we can fit a 4-foot wide path between the barn and Waltonville Road there, but then the connection's pretty good. So that was alternative number one. We think construction-wise, it'd be very hard to do it right there based on the existing features. Alternative number two is the green line coming off the same point at Windsor Court there, but traversing back to Windham Road, looking to cross there because it is at an intersection. So we thought it'd be a little safer there. However, there are horizontal sight distance issues looking both ways, left and right. So that did not meet sight distance right there to be safely crossed. But we did look along Walterville Road on the southern side, which doesn't have the utilities, a little bit more wide open, doesn't have the barn there. And we took that the whole way up to, there's an existing trail crossing. The issue with that is it's about a half a mile away and pretty far out of anyone's range. We don't think people will actually use that path if it was constructed over there. Although, we think that path along Walterville is the better of the two. So that brought us back to alternative number three, which is actually at Limerick Road, where it's probably the most convenient crossing, but we had a lot of concerns voiced last time as far as vehicle speed and what the sight distance might be at the intersection. So we did look at the sight distance, and looking northeast, it's 340 feet. The required sight stopping distance at 30 miles an hour, which is what it's posted, is 217. So it actually meets that sight distance there.
At the posted speed limit.
At the posted speed limit, yep.
Okay.
And then it actually meets it for another 10 miles an hour. Actually, if the car is going 40 miles an hour, it would still meet that required speed stopping distance coming down the hill then.
From Bullfrog Valley?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Looking towards Waltonville, it's a little bit better. At 30 miles an hour, the required is 200 feet. And we have about 500 feet there, so that could handle a car going about 55 miles per hour. So based on the three alternatives and meeting the sight distance requirements, we think alternative number three is the safest of the three. We would recommend potentially looking at two things to help safety. Number one, obviously a lot of signage. And two, considering a raised crosswalk going across Wood Road at Limerick there. We believe a lot of that traffic is probably routine traffic that goes there day in, day out. And once that crosswalk was installed, that typically can reduce traffic. It thinks it's about 6 to 7 miles an hour that will slow down traffic before a car doesn't want to hit that. Plus, they should be slowing down anywhere to get to Wood Road and Waltonville and at the stop sign. So, like I said, without spending too much time or effort into it, that was our findings of those three alternatives, and present that to you for your consideration.
Okay. Matt, the sight distance coming from Bullfrog Valley Road and the speed at which you satisfy those site distances. Is that making any sort of assumptions? In other words, are those calculations based upon a clean and dry road surface as opposed to a wet road surface?
Yeah, just dry. Yeah, there's no factors in there for a wet road.
Okay. Because obviously, I think I speak for the board, pedestrian safety is our utmost concern, and the ability of a car to recognize someone crossing the road and stop with an appropriate amount of distance coming up over top of that hill from Bullfrog Valley. It looks as though from your calculations that they still have stopping distance, even exceeding the speed limit on a dry road at 40 miles per hour.
That's correct.
Okay. Also, option number three, I would be in a whole lot of trouble if I didn't raise the issue of cost for that. And I was wondering if trouble for Mr. Negley, who insisted that I ask that question. Do we have any cost projections on what it would cost from start to finish to make all those improvements at site number three?
The cost would include, you know, looking at that guide rail, have to do something with that. Plus, there's a grade difference between the two. If you go to the southern side of the intersection, it's less steep, so it'd be less trail. No, I'm sorry. There, it's more steep there, but the site, this distance to stop, you get about another 50 feet. So if safety is a concern, mm-hmm. We may want to look into there. We'll probably have to transverse the trail back to gain grade. If you stay on the northern side, and that's where our measurements came from, the northern side, so we're conservative, that's much more steep coming down there. To answer your question about cost, we did not look into that yet.
Okay.
So if that's the direction, we can certainly do that.
Mm-hmm. Matt, would you want to further look into the north versus the south, assuming we wanted to pursue option three a little bit further?
Yeah, we at that point, to get a real good alignment, we'd have to get some survey out there mm-hmm. To do that, but we didn't want to spend that
money
up front. Something certainly we could do, and then look at different alignments within alternative three, to see what those connections might look like.
Okay.
That seems like that would be a logical next step, if everyone's in agreement.
Any thoughts on that?
So the slopes are such that it's going to require building something.
Yes. Yes. And obviously we want to make it ADA compliant. So, you know, the cost to build something to get the grades to work ADA is going to determine how, based on which side of the intersection you do, how long that connection is going to be. And then obviously there's cost associated with those.
Right.
I think it's not just Oakmont, it's the whole hill. Yeah. So the whole hill will have the opportunity to go down through Oakmont and use this. So it's
you're talking
Carolina. Oh sure, it opens up the whole accessibility of
it
that
does.
Everything.
And again, this could be one of those areas where people are attempting to cross even though they shouldn't. So if we can make it safe.
It's a great point. It's treacherous. So imagine your child riding or walking their bike across there, and the realization that you can't get anywhere because the guardrail's there. So it's good.
Well, I think it'd be a good idea to instruct HRG to move forward with that cost analysis and the configuration analysis at site number three.
And look at sort of 3A and 3B, north versus the south.
Yeah. So, do everybody in consensus with respect to that?
Yeah. Yep. And maybe give Matt more than 2 minutes to notice the next time you're going to
present. Right.
No problem.
And in the meantime, the board will take a closer look at the actual.
Yeah, because we just got this afternoon, too. So, appreciate you doing this so quickly, Matt. This is great.
We appreciate you allowing us to put you on the spot on that. But, if you could move forward with A and B analysis of site number three, that would be very appreciative. Thank you.
Thanks.
Chuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Your turn.
I'm going to give you an update on our zoning ordinance development. Over the next 2 weeks, staff and Chris and EPD will be developing a 90% document for the zoning ordinance. We anticipate getting that out to our Zoning Ordinance Development Committee for what is going to be their last workshop meeting, if you will. We'd like to get that out to them around March 18th. Their meeting would be April 14th. From there, then we'd be bringing that on to the Planning Commission for two meetings, Planning Commission meeting on May 3rd, and that's really meant to be an introduction to the ordinance. It's a different ordinance than what we're accustomed to. So that meeting on the 3rd will be for the public, for the Planning Commission, to explain how the ordinance is constructed and how to use it. The day after that meeting, we're looking at posting that ordinance on the website. In other words, we want to get it out after we give the instruction how to use it, and then bringing that on to the June 7th Planning Commission meeting for a fuller, more robust public and Planning Commission discussion. We're looking at asking our Development Committee to attend both of those meetings also, to continue through the process. From there, we'd be looking at submitting it out to the Board of Supervisors, to County Planning, and so on, for a final Planning Commission meeting on August 2nd, a public hearing in front of the Board of Supervisors on August 23rd, and pending what all is discussed, it could actually be adopted somewhere between September 13th and September 27th. These are very tentative dates, Charles. So I just wanted you to see how it's shaping up and how it's coming together. I have a more detailed listing if anybody's interested. It's on paper instead of email. That's how tentative it is.
Well, it's always good to have a plan.
Sure, but I wanted to make the board aware of where everything's coming, how the public's going to interface along the way, and so on.
Chuck, when you do get that typed up in electronic form, could you just email it to us so we have the dates?
Let's try not to put it out. Yes, I can. It is. It's all electronic.
Thank you.
I can do that.
Justin, did you have anything?
Yeah. So for the public to get involved, it would be at the Planning Commission meetings.
That's correct.
And then there'll be at least two.
There will be a total of three. Yes, two preliminary. We're still developing. We're still not 100% document. The third one is the Planning Commission that would typically be held before going to the public hearing. So at that point, hopefully, we have a 101% document that's solid to go to the hearing in front of the Board of Supervisors. Hopefully, at that point, we have a lot of public comment vetted out and incorporated where it needs incorporated.
So in advance of the first Planning Commission meeting, will the public see the document, or how will that work?
They will not. So the document's going on the website the day after we have the instructions of how to use the document. It's important that, because this is such a different style document, it has exhibits, it has more charts than text in some cases, where today we have a lot of text. We want to make sure that we don't have public, or the Planning Commission for that matter, misusing it from the start, because I think that's just going to create the snowball that we often see, that, you know, that's the concept. That's what they're going to hold on to before they understand how it all ties together.
So, but when will the public see the document?
The next day.
After the first Planning Commission.
After the first Planning Commission.
So I'm going to talk without a mic. Hopefully you can hear me. This is a stretch up here anyhow. The intent of that meeting, Justin, is to provide guidance and instruction and highlight some of the key structural changes of this ordinance, to avoid questions like, well, I don't see where the permitted land uses are. Well, that's because they're not where they were in the ordinance you've been using for 20-some years. They're going to be in a different location. I don't see the parking requirements. They're going to be in a different location. I don't understand what this graphic means. We'll take time on the 3rd with the Planning Commission, with the public there, to walk through the high points, the changes, the deviations from the existing ordinance, and really show people with examples on the screen, okay, here's the land use table, here's the parking table, here's how signs are defined now, here's where something used to be in the ordinance that you no longer have it in that exact same location, it's found a new home, it's formatted differently, we're approaching things in a different way. And walk them through that and give them the high point, give public an opportunity to actually ask questions and provide some level of inquiry that evening. And then the next morning, it will be available for full download and review. And at that point, they'll have 30 days to pour through that ordinance and come back to the June 7th Planning Commission meeting, fully engaged,
with the benefit of having the precursor. For those of you that have been on the working committee working through the development of this, for those of you that have followed along through the comprehensive planning process, it's probably a little bit more digestible for you, but this, as Chuck said, is going to be a bit of a deviation from an ordinance that's been in place for quite some time. And so the intent is to provide it in that format, gives everyone a little bit better chance to understand what they're looking at, how to dive through it, how to come back on the 7th with more direct, more focused questions for Planning Commission, for the working group to respond to and react to.
So the Planning Commission on the 7th could table it. I mean, what if there's a lot of public comment or a lot of...
We're not asking the Planning Commission to make any action on the 7th.
You're not. The 7th is the second one.
7th is the second one. The third one would be where they would make the recommendation in August. What was the date, Chuck, in August?
Me too.
August 2nd Planning Commission meeting. At that point, between June 7th and August 2nd, which is effectively a two-month period where we'd be able to work through public comment and go back to the August 2nd with the clean, as Chuck called it, the 101% document, at which point we would make a recommendation to go to the Board of Supervisors for adoption.
So there's basically two public... two sessions.
Two public sessions, yes.
And the first one is more of an explanation.
Effectively there's two and a half. The first one's open in explanation. There's the second one, the full-fledged meeting, and then the August meeting. What you're not seeing in that schedule also is it's a zoning ordinance. So there's a period of time where everybody else has to review it. The county and the adjacent municipalities have to take a look at it and make sure that we're in concurrence with our comprehensive plan. So there's a bigger process there.
Yeah, I was giving you the abridged. And just so you know, even the Planning Commission, before the first meeting that they look at it, they're only going to get it on the 22nd of April before their May 3rd meeting. So they're not going to have much time to really look at it very constructively.
Okay.
But we thought it'd still be a good meeting to talk about it, to instruct them how to use it. At that time, they'll have some concepts, but... We're trying to do this very thoughtfully, but as Chris pointed out, we have 3 months of time in there to really get comments.
Thanks.
Any other questions or comments? None? Thank you. Lauren, anything?
I have a couple things tonight. first of all, just to let everyone know, the Derry Township Municipal Authority and HRG are going to be hosting a community public meeting on Monday, April 18th at the library to discuss stormwater management and the transition of the stormwater responsibilities to the authority. Another DTMA item, the authority is looking into applying for some funding through the Commonwealth Financing Authority through their Alternative and Clean Energy Program. This would be for their co-generation and hydroelectric energy generation project. Essentially what that project does, it's two components. One is to convert excess biogas into a usable form at the facility. The second portion would involve the installation of a hydroelectric turbine that would also generate electric power for the facility. The reason I'm mentioning all of this is because if they would decide to move forward, it would require partnership with the township, as the township is an eligible applicant and the authority is not. So I anticipate that they'll be here at the next meeting to provide more information for you and ask you to consider that in more detail. One other item is the... just a heads up, something I'm looking into is the U.S. Department of Transportation currently has their TIGER grants open. It stands for Transportation Investment Generating Economic Recovery. That's a larger funding item, extremely competitive, but their grants range between $5 million and $100 million. We'll be looking a couple years out in terms of a time frame of when construction would actually occur. So just wanted to give you a heads up. I'm looking into it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Jill.
I have nothing to report. Thank you.
Okay, very well. At this time, I'd like to approve accounts payable in the amount of $403,422.04 and payroll in the amount of $328,747.95. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And accounts payable and payroll are unanimously approved.
Can we make a motion in a second?
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
It was abbreviated. Yeah. All right. We'll move on to the second visitor and public comment session. I'd like to ask anybody that has a visitor and public comment Please present to the podium, state your name and address, and try to limit your remarks to 3 minutes or less, please. Noting none, I will entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Seconded by Ms. Court. In favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And we're so adjourned. Not that I've seen so far.
Much alike. Okay. Thank you so much for the pen.
I want them on your tennis one too.
Okay.
I signed it and then